Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
With some real news around the sports world, which we'll get into in just a couple of moments. And, of course, we're a little more than 2 weeks from the NFL draft, which is going to be on Thursday starting April 23rd. And there's some news about that and MLB and all those things. We'll get into everything. The phone lines, of course, are wide open at 800-919-3776. And Rick, we start with you. How are you holding up? How are you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing fantastic, Dave. I had a nice day yesterday, little outdoor time with the kids, little watercolor, riding the bikes and everything else. So I'm all geared up. I'm ready to rock and roll for this, what hopefully is another nice Tuesday.
Okay. Lovely. And Chris, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Dave. When I went home after the show, I just went in my backyard and practiced some golf chips. So really it's the same day, just repeating over and yes. over and over and over again. Now I'm getting to the point where I'm over it.
Yeah, we are all Bill Murray right now in Groundhog Day because it's the same day over and over and over. We'll get into it a little bit later. I finished up Tiger King. These people are unbelievable. I can't believe I walked the same earth as some of these people. It's remarkable. We'll get into that as the day moves forward. Obviously,
hey,
a lot going on. Yeah,
time out quick. Here's a Tiger King related story. So I come downstairs after the show yesterday. And I was just asking Milo how school went. And he said, it went all right. And I said to my wife, is he telling the truth? How did school go? She said, well, he got off to an early meltdown, but he picked up the pieces and he finished strong. I said, well, what did they do? He said, we're going to have to go outside, do watercolors. There's a famous artist that they have to do a painting like, with the watercolors. And then I said, well, what else did they do? She said, well, they had to draw another picture and tell a story, and it was all related to what their favorite animal was. So I said, well, what did he pick? What was his favorite animal? And she said, his favorite animal was a tiger. I said, well, a tiger? I mean, that seems a little odd, no? She's like, yeah, I was surprised too. I said, well, what was the reasoning? What was the story he told? So he has to draw the picture. She takes a picture of what he drew, sends it to the teacher, and then he's going to have a voice note attached to it. So, and I'm not even joking. This is 100% what he says. He says, the reason why he chose the tiger is because it's a beautiful animal, and I hear my parents talking about the Tiger King all the time.
That's funny.
It's made it through to the next generation.
We don't want to pass it down to the next generation, Dave.
He can't watch that for years.
Yeah.
I mean, for
never.
For years.
No, never.
I mean, those are crazy people.
No, he's not equipped.
Yeah, no.
He doesn't need to see that.
I mean, the guy's like, and then he just started to play with the gun. I'm like, oh no. I mean, really?
Yeah, he knew where that was headed. Yeah,
I'm like, oh no. And then the campaign manager is watching it thinking it's a joke. I mean, come on. The guy's running for president. He's running for governor. He was third in the governor's race.
Dave, how about the ceremony for the second husband? And he starts going, the stories he's telling with the husband's mom in the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. About the genitalia.
Yes.
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 I was like, you can't say that, can you?
No, guy is... And then every time you think you've met someone who is just so out of left field, you'll never see anyone else like that. 5 minutes later, you meet someone crazier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just keeps getting... I mean, it keeps just doubling down on crazy.
It is unbelievable. We'll get into the Tiger King a little bit later. 800-919-3776. Now, there are, of course, everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. I kind of feel like we're cutting edge with the ideas that we have on the show, because it was a couple weeks ago we had seemingly, Rick, the same idea that Major League Baseball is coming out with now that you heard from Jeff Passan a little bit earlier this morning.
Yeah, Major League Baseball, it seems any of these sports leagues, the NHL, and it's going to come down to – you know, what we said over the last couple of weeks was, you know, the immediacy of the tests. And I think the willingness of the players, the athletes, to be willing to be away from their families, to be willing to, you know, be in one general, you know, city or hotel, whatever it is, and try to find a way to get these games going. Because, I mean, I got to be honest, Dave. I mean, I know you feel the same. I need it. I think we all need it. We need something to watch.
Yeah. Chris, we need it terribly, right? Terribly.
No, we got to have some live sports, Dave. I'm just waiting for one of these sports leagues to get started again. Obviously, safety has to be the priority. But, I mean, as far as entertainment goes, a lot of people look at sports as their break from the reality that they're dealing with from day to day. And based on what we've been going through the last month or so, I mean, I think that that's something that would be welcomed pretty much by everybody in our country. So I'm hoping that baseball has a way to get this done. They've worked out all of the logistics, all of the different things that they would have to have in place to protect the players and to protect all the people that are associated with supporting the players. But I mean, if they find a way to be able to pull this off out in Arizona in early May, I think everybody would be ecstatic.
Oh, yeah. So we'd have a couple of weeks of a spring training, I guess, if that, and then they would get right to the games where they'd almost lock off this area of Arizona solely for baseball, and you would just have game. It would really be unbelievable, completely unprecedented. And I'm optimistic about it. It sounds like the commissioner would like this to be the case. I just worry, Rick, I just worry that if you have one hiccup, if one guy gets tested positive, all of a sudden all of Major League Baseball would have to cease to exist, I would imagine.
No, see, that for me is going to be one of the sticking points. They're not going to get this thing. They're not going to restart this thing if that's going to be the case. They'll have, you know, the testing in place and the treatments in place where if someone does test positive, then they can quarantine that player and they can continue to test the rest of the players. And if that means, you know, having expanded rosters or whatever it is. But no, they can't. And it may be in June. I mean, maybe June, maybe it's not May. But they can't have this thing restart where teams are going to have to be quarantined if one guy tests positive.
Well, I think
there's
a lot of people are holding
testing positive.
I think a lot of people are holding out hope that as the weather continues to warm up, that the virus becomes less and less of an issue. Because based on what I'm hearing from public health officials, as it gets warmer, the virus struggles to be able to survive. So I just hope that that is the case and that we start to get on the other side of this thing in terms of being able to reach the apex of it and then, you know, not overwhelm the medical people, the healthcare professionals. I think that's the most important thing when we start talking about starting up these sports leagues, because it's inevitable that these athletes in competition, somebody is going to test positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, we've seen that already, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to happen. So it's just a matter of how do you manage that situation and continue forward with sport without jeopardizing the other athletes in competition.
Now, I guess there's a real chance that you go to Arizona, let's say, for argument's sake, and you don't leave Arizona for months. I mean, for an extended period of time. Like, you could go there in May or early June and not get out of there until September, October. My question to you, Rick, is, I mean, you're the perfect person because let's just say you are a Major League Baseball player, which is what you'd like to be anyhow, right?
Major League Baseball. I mean, you consider the green light. What I do now is Major League Baseball adjacent, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah, Jason. Right. I think most people look at that like Mike Trout follows very closely.
What do you mean? We use wooden bats.
No,
it's similar.
I'm being sincere. So... You have two young kids, right? You
yes.
have a 5-year-old and a three. Is she three?
She's three, yeah.
Okay, and a 3-year-old, and a lovely wife. How would you feel about? All right, Rick, May 17th, up and leaving your family, and there's a good chance you don't see them again till October 7th.
It would be a conversation I would have with my wife, and it would be a conversation that would end with my wife and kids staying here and, you know, probably end up having my mother-in-law up to help with the kids and in the everyday stuff. And I would be on my way to Arizona to play and make money.
So you would definitely do it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, did you hear what Jeff Passan said today? The phone call he got initially from the player when he asked the player the question, he went back and forth and he said, no, there's no way. I have young kids and mm-hmm. I'm not leaving my wife and kids. And then he got a phone call, I think it was last night or today, where same player said, well, I had the conversation with my wife. And if we don't have games, I don't get paid. So they're willing to make it work over the next couple months as long as he can go play and make money. I think a lot of people would have that conversation. There are some guys that, I mean, maybe decide they don't want to do it because they have enough money. And then there's some guys that, that need the money. They need the paychecks.
Well, I can't speak for baseball players, but I know guys in the National Football League, the majority of the players live in a different city than where they play. So most of those guys don't bring their wives and their families where they go play. They live in an apartment during the season, and then in the offseason they go back home. So, I mean, maybe this is something that would be new for guys in baseball, but it's not something that we haven't seen across other sports where guys have to miss extended periods of time away from their family in order to play.
And, Chris, too, I mean, early on, I mean, training camp, you're gone for a month at least away from your family.
Yeah. Yeah. At a minimum.
I mean, listen, Dave, here's a situation where, not only do the players need to get paid, your sport needs, like, this. The country needs you
to find a way. I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. I'm just looking, as a husband and a father, I'm thinking about me personally and leaving my family for 4 or 5 months and how devastating that would be to me.
It would be devastating and it would be tough. And I mean, we're in a time now where you can still FaceTime and everything else, but it would also be devastating if you had no season and you made no money.
You're right.
I mean, I told you yesterday, Justin Verlander's fine. He's making $33 million. Like, he's made enough money. But, I mean, if this was, you know, if this was a year where finally he got the big contract and he's losing $177,000 a day because there's no baseball, I mean, I'm sure they would find a way. It would suck. I mean, it sucks, period, now. And yeah. it would be tough to be away from your family for a couple months, 3, 4 months, whatever it is. But, I mean, it's a conversation you have, and ultimately it'd be a sacrifice you'd have to make to try to get back to work.
But Rico, here's the other thing. I don't want to just reduce this down to a matter of money for professional athletes. The reality is you only have a short period of time to be able to play a sport relative to your entire life. So you don't want to give up an opportunity that you would have because of what's going on. So if you have a chance to get back to playing the game that you love, whether it's baseball, basketball, or hockey, I mean, guys are going to push for that just because you recognize your career mortality. There's only so long that you're going to have the opportunity to do this, and you don't want to give up any chances that you have. So from that perspective, I could see why players would want to push to have the season.
Yeah, and you said something which is dead on, Rick, and that is this just sucks, right? It sucks for me. It sucks for you guys. It sucks for everybody at our station. This sucks. So you're going to, and everyone out there is going to have to do things that they're not comfortable with, right? Doctors are doing it. Nurses are doing it. Athletes are going to have to do it. I'm going to have to do it. You guys are going to, like, everyone is going to do things that they don't like, that they're not comfortable with, that are outside of the norm to be able to go ahead and live their lives. And I guess this is just another one of these things that baseball is going to have to endure.
Yeah, baseball will have to endure it. I think at a certain point, hopefully the NHL has to get back and you know, their players will endure it, the NBA. But I mean, it's not like, let's not sit here and pretend like the accommodations for the athletes too are going to be these, you know, they're going to be in the best of the best. Like, this is going to be all taken care of. I mean, you're going to put you in a situation where you'll be in a beautiful hotel. You'll have the medical, you know, the doctors and trainers that you need. Like, everything is going to be there for you. And, you know, it's making a sacrifice for the greater good is what it is. And it's, you're still playing a game. You're making a ton of money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to be willing to, it's going to be, you know, you sacrificing. There's going to be some things that are going to look different. Whatever it ends up taking to get these things back to where, you know, we can watch live sports, I think it's good for everybody. And you're going to sacrifice a little bit because right now everyone's sacrificing a little bit.
Yeah, everybody's got to sacrifice. I think what's interesting is that baseball is talking about getting started in early May, and Adam Silver said that he's not going to make a determination about what's going to happen to the NBA season until at least early May. So I guess the difference in the respective sports is what's allowing baseball to get started ahead of basketball because there's less contact between the athletes. Is that it?
I think there's probably more willingness too from I think sport to sport, there may be more willingness from the players in Major League Baseball, and I think probably the NHL, than there is maybe the NBA, because the money disparity is so much different. And like where the season's at in the NBA, and the fact that the NBA could probably, if they wanted to, move the start of next season to Christmas. So I don't think there's as much urgency.
Gotcha. Okay. But it doesn't sound like we're going to see the NBA anytime soon.
No, it doesn't.
No.
It doesn't. I mean, the commissioner spoke last night. He did had a conversation with Ernie Johnson, and he just said, you know, that any idea he's listening to, and they're not even going to consider what the next step is probably for 3 to 4 weeks from right now. So Yes, of all the sports, it sounds clearly like baseball is the one that's closest to having a potential return.
Yeah, I mean, but beyond that, Dave, I mean, when you start talking about basketball and hockey, I mean, the question is whether or not we're going to see them continue this current season at all. I think it's on the table that they would just forego the rest of the season and the postseason and think about starting up the next season, and when exactly would that be, and when it would be safest for players to get back to doing sport-related activities in team facilities. I think that's a part of the equation. I think that's something that's absolutely on the table.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Yeah. I don't disagree with what Chris just said. I think at a certain point, though, if it's Major League Baseball and it sounds like they're closest to returning, I mean, the reality for all the athletes involved is that, you know, you may, what you're signing up for is that at some point you may actually get COVID and you may have to, you know, get treated for it and try to, you know, make your way through it. Cause I mean, there's so many people involved. I mean, when you start talking about the logistics of Major League Baseball with the size of the rosters, you know, medical staff, trainers, umpires, TV crew. I mean, there's a lot of people involved with trying to put this thing on.
Tons. You're going to have to put on a TV broadcast, which is God knows how many people. You got to have the full rosters. Guys will get hurt. We know that. So what happens when guys get hurt and you have to bring someone in from the outside? Or are your top 20 prospects, or, you know, like guys that would replace them, already inside of this bubble so that if someone gets hurt, they just, you know, they don't have to travel in from Scranton. They're just ready to go. There's a million pieces of logistical things that have to be done between now and the start of any professional sport.
Yeah, but I think the reality has to be, I mean, this has to be, I mean, for all these leagues, this is freshman year in college. Like nothing can be off the table. This is the time to experiment. If it's going to be, you know, automated strike zones, if it's going to be, you know, Major League Baseball players mic'd up, whatever it ends up being, like, you have to be willing to try almost anything with the circumstances. And as far as like, well, you know, to have a, you know, a representative champion without an asterisk, come on, stop with that. I mean, we're in a situation where, I mean, we've never seen anything like this before. So, I mean, if it's 80 games, if whatever it ends up being, and you get through the playoffs and you have a champion, it's still the champion.
Everyone's still playing.
I hate that idea, like, oh, there's an asterisk. No, guess what? You know what? Certain situations call for certain things. If it's going to be 80 games, whatever it ends up being,
yep,
you play the 80 games, and then whoever comes out of this as the best team is the champion.
Yep, drastic times call for drastic measures. All right, let's take a listen. Here is Jeff Passan. He was on SportsCenter earlier this morning detailing the exact plan of Major League Baseball.
Let's just lay out the plan first, right? Major League Baseball would be isolating in Arizona. They would be playing games every day at spring training facilities at Chase Field. You might have two or three games a day there. All of the logistics of creating this biodome have to happen in order for it to happen. So there are so many hurdles that they have to leap through, whether it is ensuring the safety and health of the players, ensuring the viability of this dome so that they don't go outside of it and potentially infect other people, playing the games, getting ready for the games. Do you keep the bus drivers at the hotels? You know, all these questions that need to be answered. But what they've got, Scott, is the backing of federal health officials. Major League Baseball and now the Major League Baseball Players Association have been in touch with officials from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as the National Institute of Health. And what they have come to terms with is that the likeliest way that baseball is going to be back in 2020 is if they follow this plan. Now, it's a difficult plan to follow, but I think it's one that as time goes on, they've come to terms with the idea that they are going to have to.
All right, guys. So it sounds like if we are going to see baseball at all this season, this is going to be the way that you're going to see it. You're not going to have 48,000 lunatics at Yankee Stadium. You're not going to have us having the trips to Citi Field and the tailgates. You're not going to have Philly or any of that. It sounds like if and when it happens in Major League Baseball, this is the way it's going to be, where it's locked away some corner of the world. Everybody plays there, and it's almost like a big bubble with baseball.
Well, Dave, I think people would be okay with that as long as we get to see the sport. I mean, it doesn't matter that you don't have fans, that you don't have spectators at the actual venues. As long as the guys are out there, the names that you know playing, I think that's what everybody wants to see. I mean, it's a welcome distraction, you know, based on what we're dealing with right now. So I think that if baseball, if Rob Manfred and all of these clubs, all of these owners can pull this off, that would be a huge win, not only for the sport, but a huge win for the country as well. And who knows, Dave? I'm not going to sit here and try to say that baseball wants to be an opportunist, but what it could actually do for the sport of baseball in terms of creating new fans because you have a live sporting event, I think that that's something that baseball has to be talking about. That's something that they have to be considering because you're going to have some more eyeballs on your sport than you otherwise would.
Yeah, I think too for me, I mean, and Dave, you mentioned this earlier on in the show. I mean, with, you know, we're doing the shows from home because what we do isn't necessarily essential. You know, and we got, you know, Santi in the studio taking care of us because without him, we can't get the show on the air. I mean, I could make the argument, and this is going to seem crazy to even say this, but just I think where we're at as a country, just, I mean, being isolated the way that we're isolated, and I'll keep saying this, the mental health of the country, I mean, maybe you get to a point where it's, you got men and women on the front lines, nurses, ICU. I was watching, you know, Kelly Ripa's show this morning, and they had an ICU nurse from Long Island just talking about, you know, what she was dealing with. Her husband's a cop. So, I mean, these two, this family is on the front line doing it, you know, risking being infected. I mean, at a certain point, and I would imagine this is probably part of the conference call with the president. I mean, does it become essential that we do get some sports?
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, it's the outlet that everyone has. I mean, think of how you have real world stuff going on, or your kids aren't doing well in school, or your mother-in-law is not well, and you come home and you're like, all right, let me just put my feet up and watch the Knicks or the Mets or the Yankees. Yeah, it's important. I mean, sports is, and you take it for granted. And I think we've seen that you just, it's always there until now. And you miss it. And yeah, I think it is. I mean, do we move on if we don't have it? Of course. But I think and mental health, we've talked about this the last couple of days, how important it is to keep your sanity and your mental health at a high level. Yeah, I think having sports, anything, is very important for us.
No, it is, Dave. I mean, there's only so much series that you can watch on television and all of that stuff. And there's only so much that you can lock in on news and updates on the coronavirus. You need something else to take up your time. And if you don't have the opportunity to go out and be in parks and playgrounds, then you're going to have something constructive to focus your attention on. And it just seems like sports could fill that vacuum for the country. And that's why I'm encouraged by the news that we got from Jeff Passan about what Major League Baseball is planning to do. I just hope that it's a success, and I hope that they limit the amount of guys that are exposed and infected with COVID-19, because I think that's going to open the door for other sports to come back in this country.
But do I think it's a necessity? Do I think it's important to answer your question, Rick? Yeah. Don't you? I think it's very important that you have some level of sanity, and sports takes you away from the normal, you know, craziness that life presents every day. I can't watch the news anymore. Like, I watch 5 minutes and then it's so depressing. It's so debilitating. So yeah, I think sports now is more important, or as important as it's ever been.
Well, I think one of the biggest things you heard from Jeff Passan, and I think one of the reasons why you can be a little bit optimistic, is that you do have, I mean, Major League Baseball, with the plan that they laid out, I mean, does have the backing of the federal government. I mean, the they're getting, like, they must, for the federal health officials to be on board with this, they must feel that it's something that would be good for the country. Otherwise, why would they? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. If they didn't think this was a big deal, then they would just say, no. I mean, what you just laid out is ridiculous. Like, the chances of you know, achieving this goal are ridiculous. But, I mean, they're behind it. They're backing it. I mean, they want to see, I think everyone wants to see this thing work.
To support your point, Rick, I mean, the president of the United States, in the middle of a global pandemic, took time out of his schedule over the weekend to have a conference call with the commissioners of every major sports league, Dana White, and trying to come to some idea as to how we can get sports back underway. I think they recognize how important it is in terms of the mental health and the overall welfare of our country, you know, in being able to watch sports and let that be, you know, something that can serve as a distraction away from everything else that we're dealing with.
And I also think it gives you the confidence. That we're going to get through this. You know what I mean? Like, I just go back to, and I watched this a couple different times. Yeah, I mean, you go back to, you know, that Mike Piazza home run, you know what I'm saying? Like, and what that did for not just New York, but I mean, just for the rest of the country. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just, sports is something that brings you together as a nation. And I think it would give you, it would kind of give you that, you know, that light at the end of the tunnel, that optimism that, you know, we will get through this and we will find a way. Cause we do. I mean, we're a resilient country. We'll find a way. But just right now, I mean, sitting in your house and, you know, seeing some of the numbers, watch the news, you're like, well, you can't even say it, but when are we going to get through this?
Yeah, it's depressing.
It doesn't feel like anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, this many people infected and the charts, and this is when, you know, it's going to keep getting worse, and we're 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks out from it getting worse, and now this school is canceled and California's not going to have school for the rest of the year. Yeah, it is. It's depressing. And I understand why people are beside themselves and depressed and upset and angry and fearful and all those things. And I think sports is important. So, I mean, I could not agree with you more. If there is a way for this to potentially move forward and having these games be played, and think of how, I mean, you anticipated anyway, but every day, I mean, you said it earlier, Chris, this could be a big win for baseball because everyone's locked away in their houses. There's nowhere to go. You can't do anything. How cool would it be if everyone was watching the same games nonstop without a million distractions? I think it could potentially be a good byproduct for the game of baseball.
Could be a good byproduct for the game of baseball, Dave, but you actually mentioned it in passing earlier, just in terms of the connectivity, because we feel all so separated. We're all isolated and self-quarantining in our own homes. Think about us having the opportunity to pick up the phone and talk about the baseball game. Talk about what we saw last night, the unbelievable play, the home run, the great catch. I mean, a guy stealing second base. Like, those are the things, those are the conversations that we would be having instead of the death toll of coronavirus and how bad this week or the next week is going to be for deaths related to COVID-19. Like, we'll have something else that can serve as a distraction away from the grim reality that we now find ourselves in. So to me, I just think it would be in the best interest of everyone if we could somehow, some way safely get these games played. And if you're talking about early May, that would be awesome, Dave.
You know what's interesting too, Chris, what you just said as far as picking up the phone? I think that for me has been one of the toughest things. I mean, even just, you know, not being able to come into the studio and sitting around just chopping it up, talking about whatever is, I mean, by nature, we're so social, and to be cut off from, you know, from everyone around you, just having conversations. I mean, you know, Ray Dinahan, who works in the show, just, you know, texts me about reading a book. Well, that's okay. I can read a book, but who am I going to talk about reading the book with? Like, I'm not going to. I don't have a book club.
Maybe one or two other people. That's about it.
Yeah, not me.
You know what I mean? Like, sports ends up being that common thread. We had this conversation about, you know, your relationship with your dad, and you know how, you know, sometimes conversations with your dad are like, "Hey, what's up? Nothing. Okay, talk to you later." But when you have sports to talk about, it kind of brings back that social aspect a little bit, where you can actually pick up the phone, or you can, you know, FaceTime a buddy while you're watching a game, whatever it ends up being. But I think that for me has been part of the struggle is you don't. I mean, outside of my wife and kids, and occasionally FaceTiming with some family and friends, that I mean, the ability to socialize is gone.
It's extinct.
I mean, you're rushing around. Like, I used to love going to the grocery store. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I'm trying to get in and out of there in record time. I mean, you're avoiding people. You're 6 feet, 10 feet away from people. Like, I saw my neighbors yesterday. I'm 20 feet away from their car because, you know, God forbid I got closer. I mean, Cassie would have a nervous breakdown. So, I mean, just, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm overstating it. Maybe it's just how I feel. Maybe I'm the only one that feels this way. I know you guys maybe feel the same way I do. I just, if I was in this similar situation where I was still playing in the NHL, or I was a professional baseball player, or, you know, LeBron James or one of these NBA players, I would take this opportunity and use it as a badge of honor that, you know, with everyone that's had to sacrifice, if it means me being away from home for a couple months or whatever it ends up being, I'm going to be willing to do it, because there's enough people. It's not everybody, but there's enough people that would benefit from us being out there playing.
Yeah, I think that's true. And think about this for a second also, and this is not solely the baseball games going on, but if baseball goes on, and let's make up a day, May 27th, right? Let's say Memorial Day weekend, something around there, and there's no competition, there's no basketball, there's no hockey, there's nothing else going on. I mean, you talk about winning the day. How good would that be for the game of baseball, that people are almost, if you want sports, and we know that everybody does, you're forced into it. You can't leave your house. You have no other options. How good would that be for the game of baseball?
I think it'd be a win for baseball, Dave. And to take your point a step further, if you look at the season being shortened, the intensity and the urgency that these clubs are going to approach every single game, it's going to make it more compelling for the audience at home. So I think that that's a way to put your best foot forward in terms of being able to sell your product to some folks that wouldn't otherwise be watching baseball games in May, June, July. So I just think that, you know, not to take it to the business angle of it, but I mean, in just looking at some of the unintended benefits of what could potentially happen for the sport. I mean, you can't help but think that this could be an opportunity for baseball to appeal to an audience that it would otherwise not have the chance to.
Yep. And I said it yesterday, Rick, this rings true even more so today. If there's ever an experiment that they want to have, if they want to do home run derby after 10 innings or California rule where a runner starts at second base or, you know, a doubleheader where it's seven innings each or an automated umpire, whatever it is that they want to choose to do, this would be the time, because the negative feedback I don't think would be there nearly as much, if at all, as it would be during the course of a normal season.
No, you're not going to get any pushback from the players.
No.
I mean, they'll be willing to do whatever it takes. I mean, I mentioned freshman year of college. For you, Dave, this is lefty, righty, stranger, whatever it is. I mean, you're experimenting. Whatever it takes to get the job done, you're going to be willing to do it. And how about the long-term ramifications in the sport, too? I mean, let's face it. I mean, the NFL is America's pastime now, right? So if all of a sudden now you're in the house with your kids, and for the next 2 months, baseball is the only thing on television?
Yep.
Maybe all of a sudden, maybe that reinvigorates the love of baseball for the younger generation.
Yeah. I don't see a lot of negativity now. I get a tweet. We all get a tweet. I love the Yankees, but there's nothing I want to see less than a Yankee game played at an empty stadium in Arizona being called by Joe Buck. I will gladly wait until next season. Well, I will not.
You'll give be by me, yourself.
Yeah.
You'll be by yourself with that.
Right? Give me Yankees, Blue Jays, empty stadium in Arizona every single day of the week. Do you know what? I mean, my life would be so different if we had baseball right now. Think of how much happier and better things would be. And I'm not saying to do it if there's tremendous risk, but if you can get away and do it without tremendous risk, think of how much that would help this country right now.
Yeah, I can't think of the negative. And that, for me, every time I hear that excuse, playing in front of empty arenas, empty stadiums, it drives me crazy. I mean, how many times, Chris, have you played growing up in front of an empty, in front of just your parents or like a handful of people? I played an Eastern Conference Finals game in the AHL at home, and we had 11 people in the stands for warm-up. 11. Yeah. You could count them. There was 11 people. I mean, stop it. I mean, just don't forget where you came from. Like, the whole empty arena thing, it drives me crazy. Well, it'd be hard. Okay, guess what? I mean, you're saying that's hard. You know what would be hard? Would be in being New York City working in the ICU. That's
yes,
hard right
that's
now.
Yes, that's hard. Yeah.
Stop it.
Playing a game people, in an huh? empty venue with millions of people watching back home, it doesn't seem like it's that hard.
Yeah.
Especially
Mic
when you consider what guys are getting paid. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I mean, you could have fan interaction, right? You could have like tweeting during the game. There's so many possible ways. You could have social media. Like, there's so many things baseball could do which could connect them back to the American public. All right. 800-919-3776. Want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN. On the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go. Let's get into the NFL. Todd McShay, I don't know if you guys heard him on the K Show yesterday. He talked about the potential of Miami moving up to one. A lot of interesting things he got into. He was asked about Trevor Lawrence. He's like, oh, guys, he is the slam dunk of all slam dunks. There is absolutely no doubt that he's the number one pick and is going to be sensational at the NFL level. But he also got into the locals, the Jets and the Giants. Let's start with the Giants. Here is Todd McShay giving his analysis of Big Blue in the draft.
I think so. I think, what was it, Carl Banks is the last time they spent a first-round pick on a linebacker, but what does that matter? That's the thing with Simmons. And listen, he's not completely developed yet. He can get a little bit better at his recognition skills versus the run and taking on blocks. But this guy is everything you want if you're a defensive coordinator in the NFL right now. Because what the problem is, you're starting to see more and more teams offensively going to the no huddle and tempo and trying to force you to stay on the field with your personnel, right? So if you have a linebacker who can play in the slot, who can cover a tight end if you flex that tight end out, who can cover a big wide receiver, who can play the single high safety spot on occasion if you're stuck in that kind of personnel grouping. And if you watch the Ohio State game, the interception he makes where he goes 30-plus yards and goes over and plucks it like a corner, you don't find many guys like that at 6'3", 240 running the speed that he runs. So I think Simmons, again, while not completely developed, is so intriguing to a lot of teams because of today's NFL and what you're trying to combat defensively against these new school offenses.
Now, Chris, I know that you've been a proponent of the Giants going offensive line. If they did go Simmons fourth overall 2 weeks from Thursday, your take on that would be what?
My take on that would be the Giants are transitioning from an odd front defense to a four down look. I mean, you would have to. I mean, you heard it right there with Todd McShay. He said he's got to be ready in his recognition in terms of the run game, being able to stack and shed blockers. Like, those are all things that odd front middle linebackers have to deal with. And if he's going to play inside linebacker in the National Football League, he's going to have to be covered up by two defensive tackles. So to me, if you're going to go that direction and draft Isaiah Simmons, you're going to have to build a scheme around him. Kind of like what you saw with the Chicago Bears once upon a time when they drafted Brian Urlacher, who was a safety out of New Mexico. Like, they built the scheme around him and they protected him with defensive tackles that were disruptive and commanded double teams. You're going to have to do the same thing with Isaiah Simmons. Otherwise, it's probably not going to be a fit for the Giants. You know, you start talking about a guy that fits today's positionless football. Yeah, Isaiah Simmons is great for sub packages when you talk about nickel and dime defenses. But the toughest part about it is, where is he going to fit in your base defense? And that's why I think if you're going to draft a guy like this, then you want him to be on the field every single down. And that means he's going to have to play some first and second down in base. And I don't know that the Giants are employing a scheme right now defensively that fits his skill set.
Yeah, you want to know what position is not positionless is offensive tackle. I mean, isn't part of building your team, too, dependent on your division? I mean, didn't that go into it? I mean, the best way to make the playoffs is to win your division, correct?
Yes.
All right, so look at the teams you're playing against in your division. Look at the defensive line once they add Chase Young of the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, scary.
Look at the Cowboys' defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Eagles' defensive line. You think you have adequate – you think at this moment right now
– No.
You have adequate protection for your second-year quarterback in Saquon Barkley?
No. In fact, not only do I think you don't, I know you don't. I mean,
why is it a question?
Disaster.
So why is it a question? Your GM's in the hot seat. So, I mean, best case scenario is you don't have this opportunity to draft in the top five ever again, right? Like, you have a decent season and you're more middle of the pack. You have the opportunity to draft the best available offensive lineman, and you need offensive line help. Why wouldn't you take advantage of that?
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement that's the way that you go if you're the Giants.
But to further your point, Rick, think about this. If you talk about the defense and all the holes that you have to fill on that side of the ball, what keeps your defense from being exposed is your offense being able to control time of possession. If you add an offensive lineman and improve that group up front, that makes Saquon Barkley better, that makes Daniel Jones better, and all of a sudden now your offense has the makings of being able to control the complexion of the game. And that's going to make your defense a whole hell of a lot better. So to me, it just makes sense to go with the offensive side of the ball to continue to complete that unit, because that's where you have the majority of your young, talented players. It's on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I just don't know how. I mean, Isaiah Simmons is great. I mean, I don't dispute that. I mean, he is a physical specimen. I think, I mean, you've seen plenty of tape of him at Clemson being, I mean, as disruptive as it comes. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you're still supported by a lot of talent when you play for Clemson. Who on the Giants? I mean, you name the playmaker on the defensive side of the ball that's going to help support Isaiah Simmons over the next couple of years.
I mean, right now you're just hoping, Rick. You're hoping
exactly
that it's
right.
going to be Dexter Lawrence. You're hoping that it's going to be Jabril Peppers. You're hoping that James Bradbury can be a veteran presence that can help steady that unit. But right now it's a bunch of hope. You don't have any proof. You don't have anything that's definitive to hang your hat on. That side of the ball has no identity. Your offense already has an identity. It's Saquon Barkley. And then your young quarterback being able to develop. That's the identity of your team. So continue to build on that.
Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing, though, too. I mean, you may think at the moment, like when you look at the offensive line, it's okay. It could definitely be, it definitely needs an upgrade. But why wait until it's too late? Like, why wait until all of a sudden Nate Solder, you can't play him at left tackle? Like, why not use the opportunity now to get someone that, you know, can be the replacement at some point for Nate Solder?
Yeah. And I actually had the thought of, you'd go one and two. Like, you take a left tackle with the fourth overall pick, and then you take the center out of Michigan,
Ruiz or Cushenberry, one of those guys.
And then all, you turn your, because if your offensive line is good, and I think you have the potential to do that in this draft, you got a terrific running back. I think you might have a terrific quarterback. You've got good enough receivers. You have a tight end when healthy that's clearly a mismatch nightmare for other teams. Like, you have a potential to really put a good offense together out there if you're the Giants this coming season and beyond and for years to come.
Absolutely. Well, here's the other thing, though, too, Dave and Chris, depending on what happens with Christian McCaffrey, I mean, you're going to have to, after this upcoming season, you're going to have to pay Saquon Barkley. Right? I mean, you're going to have to, if Christian McCaffrey gets an extension this offseason, you're going to have to, after this season, you're going to have to pay Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I don't think it matters whether McCaffrey gets an extension or not, because Ezekiel Elliott got paid after his third year.
No, I know, but I mean, what you've seen with running backs is maybe there's a pullback, but if Christian McCaffrey gets paid, Saquon Barkley's going to get paid.
I mean, you can stop it with Saquon Barkley's going to get paid. Just because of
He'll get paid.
Yeah, he's going to get paid. Whether Christian McCaffrey gets his money from Carolina or not, I think he will, to your point, but whether or not he gets paid, Saquon Barkley is going to demand that you pay him after this upcoming season.
Okay, so if that's the case and you're not going to lose Saquon Barkley because you took him with the second overall pick,
there's no
I'm
way
going to want to take
him.
Okay, then I'm going to want as much production as possible for the money I'm paying my running back.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't only go one offensive line. I'd go two. I'd make the offensive line a strength because your guards are good. I can draft a staple left tackle and the best center out there. I can change the entire complexion of this offense in one night.
And more importantly, Dave, you're talking about three of your starting offensive linemen moving forward being younger than the age of 25. That, to me, that's the part that's appealing about it, because you've got a young quarterback and you've got a young running back. So you want to have the nucleus of what your offensive line is going to be in place for years to come, because we all know that that position group, more so than any other position group, relies on chemistry in order to produce at the highest level.
All right, more from Todd McShay on the Jets. Here he is discussing gangrene.
The Jets should be in a good situation. They want quarterbacks to go, as most teams do. They want Burrow to go. They want Tua to go. They want Jordan Love and Justin Herbert to go. I think Joe Douglas would love to be sitting there at 11 and looking at Jerry Jeudy, the best wide receiver in the class, and two or three of the top offensive tackles still on the board. To me, whether it's Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, I like Jedrick Wills a lot from Alabama, any one of those tackles. You got Mekhi Becton, who's 363 pounds and ran a 5.10 in the 40-yard dash. He's a freak out of Louisville. So there's a lot of talent at offensive tackle and at wide receiver. So knowing those guys, like, it wouldn't even surprise me if they moved back a little bit and took advantage of a team that was freaking out and trying to move up and go get a player that they wanted at that spot. Because with four offensive tackles and five wide receivers that all belong in the first round, if you can move back just a few spots and get an extra pick or two and still get basically the same player, why wouldn't you? They'll sit tight. They won't move up, is my guess, and they will they'll wind up drafting the best player available, if not moving back and still getting that same player with an extra pick or two.
Yeah, I would get nervous moving back, because we talk about the offensive linemen, and I don't know how many of them will be there at 13, 14, 15, but I do think the Jets are in a good position, Rick.
No, I think the Jets are in a great position, and it'll depend. I don't necessarily love, and again, we don't know what their boards look like and how these players are ranked on their draft boards, but I mean, I don't necessarily love the idea of moving back and taking, you know, the third or fourth best wide receiver if I'm sitting at 11 and can take the best wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't love that idea either. I don't. Because I do think there's a separation. Even though this is a really talented wide receiver group, I do think there is a separation between the top two players in this class versus the rest of the guys. I know some people have it at three, but to me it's CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, then it's everybody else.
Yeah, but it sounds like, without a doubt, you can get one of those two guys at 11. Like, if you're the Jets, you can get Judy. You probably have your pick and get the top overall wide receiver in a deep wide receiver draft. That, to me, would be the way to go. Or the best lineman that you have rated overall at 11. I don't know. I get nervous about moving back if I was the Jets in this draft.
Yeah, I would get nervous about it too, but I think it's all contingent on how you set your board, right? And how these offensive linemen come off. Because if the Giants take an offensive lineman at 4, and then the Cardinals take an offensive lineman at 8, you know, no telling what the Cleveland Browns could potentially do at 10. You're talking about not having, you know, the top two or the top three guys on the offensive line position available when you pick at 11. So to me, at that point, it makes it more of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens, too. I mean, with all these reports coming and not, who knows where, I mean, where the reports are coming from. I mean, who's leaking these reports or whatever else. But, I mean, one of the needs for Dallas in this upcoming draft, you could make the argument that it is safety. So if all of a sudden they circle back and they offer you a first-round pick for Jamal Adams, multiple picks, a first-rounder, so whatever it ends up being. I mean, they have the 17th overall pick. So, I mean, that I wouldn't be surprised if you see more trades happen before the actual day of the draft.
Mm.
Than you would normally, just because
it's
going
to be so
all.
Clunky to make trades the night of, probably.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the clock all of a sudden, you're going to try to make trades. I got a GM saying that his kids are going to be answering the phone, and who knows what his wife is going to be.
Darren, do me a favor, call the league office, tell them we've done this.
Now, can you imagine if you picked up the phone and like this is your job? I mean, this is, I mean, you're getting paid millions of dollars to be a GM, and you have, you know, whatever it is left on the clock, and you try to make a deal with the Chargers, and you call, and then the Tom Telesco's son picks up the phone. Can I help you? Hello? Yeah, I'm looking for your dad.
Funny.
Is dad home, please?
That's funny. But you know, Rick, and talking about that a little bit further, and I'd be interested to get Mike T's take on this at 11:30, but a lot of the general managers and the front office people, they go through these draft simulations where they have mocks, and they talk about what potential trades could be out there, and they discuss ahead of time with other teams these scenarios that could play out. So maybe you see them try to put the structure in place for potential deals that could come about based on where they're at the night of the draft. So I think that it does add a degree of difficulty on executing a draft day trade, but I don't think it's something that these general managers can't overcome in terms of being able to actually facilitate that when we get to the draft.
All right, now there are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands, avoid close contact with people who are sick, avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth, stay home when you are sick, cover your cough or sneeze, clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. We are just moments away from the one and only Mike Tannenbaum joining us. Don't you always feel, Rick, like we could talk to him for an hour? Like there's, I always feel when we say, all right, thanks so much for the time, Mike, we'll talk to you next week, that there's 15 more questions that I could have.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of most of our guests is that, I mean, I would do segments. I know we get yelled at, like wrap it up, but I mean, we could easily, especially with the timing of this, we could do easy 2-3 segments with Mike.
Easily 2-3 segments. All right, Santi, we have Mike on the line? Yes? All right, let's bring him in. We were just waxing poetic about how good of a guest you are, Mike, and Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, great to be with you guys, and you're my favorite host, so it's, you know, a very complimentary relationship to one another.
Yeah, it's the yin and the yang, baby. All right, let's get right to it. So, we've heard rumblings, and I don't know how legitimate they are, that the Dolphins love Joe Burrow and are considering making a big offer to move up to one and get that spot from Cincinnati. Is there any belief in your mind that can potentially happen?
You know, ordinarily I would say yes, given the fact that if what you're saying is true, certainly Miami has a lot of ammo, but just knowing Mike Brown and his proclivities of how he operates things, he's a very set in his ways sort of gentleman, and once he makes his mind up, I've made some moves with him and certainly has had, you know, try to make some trades. So if, and I'm being presumptuous here, guys, but if I'm Cincinnati, I'm taking Joe Burrow. He's from Ohio, and I just can't imagine that anything's going to change his mind.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, especially, I mean, with the financial aspect too, what Joe Burrow would bring to that team as far as, you know, selling jerseys and everything else. Mike T, with what's going on with Tua, the fact that you can't get your hands on him, you haven't had a chance to see him have his pro day and everything else. I know you had said this earlier, and I think this was the feeling from a lot of people, that the draft would start at three, that maybe you'd see Miami move up to three or the Chargers move up to three. The closer we get to this, do you have the feeling now that maybe Miami just stays pat at five and you don't see anyone trade up to three to try to get Tua?
Yeah, I'll say this, Rick. There was a really interesting article yesterday by Albert Breer in SportsIllustrated.com, and he, on the record, interviewed a gentleman named Dr. Thomas Gill, who was a longtime team physician of both the Red Sox and the Patriots. And he goes into some great detail about when the Red Sox were signing Pedro Martinez without an MRI and how scary it was. And he ultimately turned out to be right in terms of the rotator cuff injury that shortened Pedro Martinez's career ultimately with the Mets. And it's just a scary proposition. I just know when talking to people around the league that because it's the type of injury we're talking about with the hip and Tua, that in this year, unfortunately for him, it's a big concern. And again, we're not talking about a knee, an ankle, an Achilles, something that's predictable. So I would be surprised if anybody would certainly trade up for Tua. And candidly, guys, I wouldn't be shocked if Justin Herbert went before Tua because of the uniqueness of this year.
Yeah, Mike T, here, just to follow up on that. I mean, and you were in Miami. I mean, you're the GM of the Dolphins. How much, and this may sound like a silly question, but I would imagine there's some Miami Dolphins fans that still feel a way about this. You know, is there any pressure because of what happened with Drew Brees and that whole situation where they didn't clear him medically and he's gone on to have the kind of career he had in New Orleans?
Yeah, you know, it's a fair question. That cast, you know, a huge shadow over the franchise. Even when I was there, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, that was one of the worst, you know, medical evaluations on record in terms of Coach Saban couldn't sign him at the time. And we obviously know what has gone on with Drew Brees. So there is a risk of, hey, if we take him, he gets hurt. That's a huge risk. And it's a fair point. There's a risk if you don't, and he turns out to be a great player like a Drew Brees. So I think the challenge is you just don't know what you're going to have for a long period of time. But I would think in this year, because of the weird state of the world, it's hard to take a risk when you just can't get your hands on the player.
Mike T, the NFL has let it be known that they're not going to allow team officials to run the draft from their facilities. Teams are going to have to do it from their homes, whether it's the general manager or head coach or whatever. A lot of the questions that have come up in terms of the overall logistics and communication and potentially facilitating draft day trades, based on the knowledge that you have on the situation and actually being a former general manager, can you gauge the degree of difficulty on executing a draft day trade under these circumstances?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard, Chris. You know, I've done it before. And look, if we're sitting there at 10, we're talking to teams at 8 and 9, maybe try and move up, you know, a spot or two. We're also talking to teams 11 and 12, maybe down to 14 to say, hey, should we slide back or pick or two? And let's just say we're, you know, the Jets and we want an offensive lineman and we feel like if we get any one of these three, we'd be happy. I don't know how you can do that virtually. Like, there's so much you can do nowadays, but, you know, there's three of you working the phones at the same time, and then you're taking that information back to your head coach and owner and saying, okay, here are the three options. Do we trade up? Do we trade back? Or do we just stay where we are? And sometimes you have 20 seconds or less to make a decision. And then you have to get the league office on the phone and make sure that if you're making a trade, the trade's not official until the league office has the exact matching phone calls from both teams. So that's a tough one for me. I just don't know. In my mind, I think if we're sitting here the Monday after the draft, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a record small amount of trades, because for that very reason, I just think it's going to be a lot harder to pull it off this year.
Mike, the scenarios that you're discussing, are teams going to have more of those conversations ahead of the draft just so as things play out, they could be in better position? Does that happen?
I think so, and one of the best trades I ever made was with Darrell Revis, and I made that the night before with Marty Herney, who's still the GM of the Panthers, where we said, hey, look, there's going to be one player we want to move up for. If he's there at 14, we're coming up. Here's what we're going to do, and we're not going to try to get that pick for less when you're on the clock. But likewise, if we agree to this, I don't want to have you hold us up for more when you're on the clock. And we had a great relationship and we had a good faith understanding of what was going on. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that, but you have to have a lot of trust because you don't have a sense of like, okay, if we're going up for two at three, and we agree the night before with Detroit that we're giving up 2-1s and a 2, whatever it is, that all of a sudden that turns into 2-1s and 2-2s or something like that. So you can do those things and have handshakes to say, like, hey, this is what we're going to do. But my gosh, you know, you just don't want to have the worm turn at the last second.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. We've heard rumblings that there could be four quarterbacks taken in the top 10. Do you think so? Do you think Tua goes? Do you think Herbert? I know you think goes. And do you think Love as well goes, all of them, and Burrow in the top 10?
I don't see Jordan Love going in the top 10. I just don't believe it. And I could be proven wrong, but I'd really be surprised. You know, just given his body of work, given the regression this year, and I've heard people say, well, you know, it's a new head coach, it's new coordinator. Well, guess what? Like, there's going to be new head coaches and new coordinators in the NFL, and there's still an expectation of production. And there's things about Jordan Love I like. I like his height. I like his athleticism. I like his arm strength. But I think he's at least a year away. And because of that, at the end of the day, Dave, I don't see him being a top 10 pick. I mean, let's go back a year ago. There were a lot of questions about Daniel Jones, and candidly, there still are. And he played a lot of football. He played a ton of football at Duke, and you know, you could argue that maybe he was overdrafted. I just don't know, based on what film this year, we could sit here in good conscience and say that guy's a top 10 pick.
Yeah, you'd have to go back to his film from the year before. Hey, man, he does. Well, you know, watching some of his games, watching some of his film, I mean, I would understand it if a team did it. I mean, there are some things he does as far as different arm angles, his ability to escape the pocket and make throws down the field. He does kind of a little bit resemble Pat Mahomes, a little bit. So I could see a team falling in love with that. Mike T, I've heard John Harbaugh suggest that maybe he would be concerned that someone could hack into their system. They're trying to do this, go through this draft, which, I mean, if a team did that, they should, I mean, the punishment would be astronomical. But for you, if you were in this situation now, you're at your house, who for you would be essential to have a successful draft? I mean, what's the, how long is the list of people that you would need to have a successful draft?
Yeah, not much. You want your head coach, your owner, and probably your trainer. Because once the board's set, and one of the most proud things I always said about running a draft is when you turn that card, it is an organizational effort, and you want to make sure those people are recognized and feel, you know, validated. I was nice to see Joe Douglas give credit to the IT department at the Jets the other day. There was an article about how he was handling things. And that's, you know, I think a great example of what leadership is, you know, acknowledging other people. And you feel great about your security department, your IT department, medical. So all those people contributed. But to answer your question, on the exact moment of the draft, you really need very, very few people. It's just the mechanics of the trades that I struggle with, because when you're sitting in that chair and you have to make a decision, you really need all your information in real time to say, all right, fellas, here's what we need to do and here's why. Does anybody disagree? And those things change literally minute by minute because other teams' needs and their strategy changes as well. And it's this giant chess match. So I do think we're just going to see less trades, and I do think you could have a good draft beyond that.
Mike T, I've always felt like three of the hardest positions to find top-end talent in the National Football League are quarterback, offensive tackle, and edge rusher. In this year's draft, you seem like you have a lot of talent with the quarterback position and the offensive tackle position at the top end, but not so much with the edge rusher. Who's a name that a lot of people aren't hearing that could potentially be called on the first night of the draft that's in that edge rush category?
Yeah, I like this guy, Uche, out of Michigan, and I'm not sure if he'll go in the first night, but certainly in the second or third round. He's a little undersized for Michigan, but he's a good pass rusher. He had a good week in Mobile, good motor, good leverage, good initial quickness. I don't know if he's a three-down player, but to answer your question, Chris, he does have the ability to rush the passer.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. We go round and round, a lot of questions. All right, here's the next one for me. It seems like there's a consensus of the top four offensive linemen in this draft. Can you do me a favor and put them in your order from 1 through 4?
Yeah. To me, it's Andrew Thomas for sure. I like him a lot. He really reminds me a lot, guys, of the Brickishaw Ferguson. He's long. He's smooth. I think there's very little holes in his game. I know some people question his motor a little bit just in terms of, you know, I wouldn't say he's not the classic finisher in terms of, you know, driving people off the ball. And we all wish we saw more of that, but candidly, that's just not the way our game's being played anymore. But I just don't see any holes in his game. So I would start with him. Jedrick Wills is probably next for me. I like him a lot. He played right tackle at Alabama. What's interesting about that is that's really a left tackle because, you know, Tua was left-handed. So I think he has really good functional athleticism, good athlete, and should be a really good pro. The next one is probably Mekhi Becton. And I'm deviating a little bit from I want to ignore the workout, but when someone's 364 pounds and runs 5'1", like, that is unbelievably freakish. So, you know, I've seen the comparison, Jason Peters, that probably makes sense, but the guy's 364. And then the next one for me would be Tristan Wirfs. He's a good athlete from the University of Iowa. I wish he had a little bit more tenacity to his game. I wish he finished a little bit better, but I think he has guard, tackle, flexibility, and I think he'll have a good pro career as well.
All right, so Mike T, let me put you in Joe Douglas' seat. So you have the 11th overall pick. You just gave me your list of offensive tackles. So let's just say, for the sake of this question, Thomas is off the board, Wills is off the board, and Becton is off the board. So you're just sitting there with Wirfs. He's your fourth-rated offensive tackle. You need a wide receiver. Because, you know, because it is so hard to find an offensive tackle. I mean, you got Sam Darnold. Do you take the tackle, or do you take your top-rated wide receiver in that spot?
I think for this year, the way I would answer that is I would take the tackle. I would also, if I was the Jets, look a little closer at those defensive ends to either Chasen from LSU or maybe Espinenza from Iowa, because I think pass rush is another area that they could use. But if you're saying offensive tackle receiver, I would definitely take the tackle. There's so many intriguing receivers this year. And candidly, I think that's why Robbie Anderson saw his market go down. And it's something we've talked about. You know, the supply and demand of the receiver position this year is historically deep in the college ranks.
Mike T, that being said, who's the best of this year's receivers class, in your opinion?
Oh, Henry Ruggs for me. Let's go back to the Super Bowl, Chris. Tyreek Hill made the one or two plays in the game that separated the 49ers and the Chiefs from being champions. And when you look at Ruggs, I see a very similar guy, very similar style. His speed is explosive. He's a football player that has world-class speed. He's not a track athlete, and he plays that way. So I'm really excited about seeing him at the next level. I love Judy. CeeDee Lamb is a really interesting guy for me because when you watch him play, he plays really physically, but when you see him on up close, he is like thin and like it's shocking how physical he is given the way he looks. So I give him a ton of credit, but for me, I go Ruggs, Judy, and then him.
Is there any chance in your mind that Chase Young slips to 4 in the Giants?
Zero.
I mean, I'm trying to ask questions to Mike. I wanted to see if he thought there was any chance of that happening.
Dave, what does that seem from, you know, Dumb and Dumber? You know, so you're saying there is a chance? No, there is no chance.
No shot.
Let me file that away so I can not be disappointed on April 23rd.
I will buy Rick DiPietro's chai latte from Starbucks for the next 5 years every Tuesday, regardless of where I am on this planet, if Chase Young is there at 4.
I don't know what would be better, Mike T. That happening, because, I mean, a delicious chai tea latte in 5 years, especially a venti. I would kill for that. I don't know if that would be better because I would get the free latte, or if that's some reason the Giants drafted Derek Brown with the 4th overall pick. Any chance that happens?
Oh.
Yeah, I do. Derek.
But why would you not move back if you're going to take Derek Brown?
Well, I think that's fair. I mean, if you could get Derek Brown in a 3, absolutely. I think the other X factor for them, and I know everyone's talked about, you know, it's been since Carl Banks, since they've drafted a linebacker, but someone's going to have to tell me why Isaiah Simmons is a bad idea. Isaiah Simmons is, to me, the answer of Tyreek Hill and Deebo Samuel. The guy can blitz, cover. I think he's a special guy. He's high character. He, to me, checks every box. So if we're talking about what's best for the Giants, someone's going to have to convince me why Isaiah Simmons would be a bad alternative.
Mike T, I know everybody's saying Isaiah Simmons is this ultimate chess piece on the defensive side of the ball, but where does Isaiah Simmons fit in a base defense in the NFL?
Boy, that's a great question. I don't even know if we play base defense anymore because we play 65% in sub because so many teams line up in three receivers.
Yeah,
so,
I get that part of it, Mike T, but you still got about 30% where you're going to be in base defense. So when you're talking about drafting a linebacker in the first round, you're not going to take that guy off the field ever. So he's going to have to play base. I'm asking you, in your opinion, where does he fit?
Yeah, I think we answered that question in real life. We took Minka Fitzpatrick at 11, and he lined up at safety. So if I had to answer the question, certainly at safety. But I'll tell you this, you know, if a receiver, you know, came out of the backfield on motion and, you know, you could flex him out or he could have a running back 40 yards down the field. So I line him up, you know, I send him to the safety room. I line him up at free safety, but I move him all around. And the other thing, too, like when you're assessing players for the draft, guys, when you look at his versatility, I don't ever have to talk to him. I don't ever have to ask a coach. I never have to give him a wonder look test. Isaiah Simmons is really smart. There is no way you could ask him to do what he did at Clemson at that high level of a program and for them to play as well as they did unless he has incredible football acumen. I mean, it's really – he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves when you put the tape, his football acumen, and his ability in terms of I don't see a hole in his game or how you can just draft him and say, like, boy, I'm really glad he's on our team.
So you see him as a safety?
Initially, but again, but he could line up and, look, if we're playing the Giants, he could go run with Saquon Barkley. He could cover a tight end. He can blitz. I would line him up at safety, but that versatility, that three-down value, I think, you know, you think about guys like Troy Polamalu and guys that have really changed the game, I think he's in that discussion. And more importantly, when you look at the players he has to defend, he can match up athletically, and those guys are so hard to find. And again, going back to Minka Fitzpatrick, when we drafted him, his versatility we felt was like a real strength and very, very hard to find.
All right, Rick, I know you like to get your last question in, and we do have to run with Mike. Do you have a final question to throw his way?
Yeah, final one for me. Mike T., you know, not having the ability to, you know, to see a bunch of these guys down at their pro days, do you think now because of the current situations and you being a GM kind of locked in your house, just going over tape and, you know, not really relying on, you know, other factors, do you think that's to a GM's benefit or to his detriment?
Well, that's a good question. I think what we're going to see this year is, in my opinion, much more conservative drafting. And what I mean by that is, I think we're going to see tons of players from the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Power Five schools where they're established programs. And I think it's going to be harder for the smaller school players to work their way up. And I think this is a year you're going to see a lot more singles and doubles. And you're going to see people buy, you know, the J&J stock and IBM and not, you know, these tech startups because you just don't have enough information on them.
All right, Mike. Good stuff as always. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we will talk to you next Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rick, I'm giving you exactly 7 days to match my offer, so I'm giving you 5 years of Starbucks drinks if Chase Young's at four. I would like to know what the corresponding bet is from your end.
Well, I think I'm on board with you. I think Chase Young goes at two. I mean, Dave's just wishful thinking. I'm
asking the question that people want to have answered.
And Mike T, you already know. I mean, I don't care how many years it is whenever you want a soy chai tea latte, because God forbid you get gassy, it's going to be there for you. I'm going to take care of my guy.
Well, I appreciate that. And maybe we could figure out some other, you know, wagers between the Jets and the Giants. But look, we'd love to see Chase Young as a Giant. I just, you know, we keep talking about Gettleman moving back. I mean, shouldn't the discussion mean, like, what is it going to take for, you know, them to go up from 4-2?
That's not crazy.
Come on. What, the Giants going to start mortgaging the future? They could have done that by losing that stupid game down the stretch to the Redskins.
Great point.
Yeah.
Great point.
I got a lot of them. All right, Mike, we appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care. That is, listen, I got a lot of good points. What do you want me to do?
What are the chances Chase Young is there at four?
I had to ask.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
Daniel Jones won the game after the five touchdowns. Thank God for that.
Because four touchdowns wouldn't have been enough. He got the five and really hammered home the point.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.